Hello, you beautiful, wonderful patron, you.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for listening to this very special patrons-only episode of Shonen Flop. I'm Jordan, and with me today, as usual, is my lovely co-host, David. Say hi, David.
Hi there, David.
It's not Guns Blaze West this time, David.
I know, it's... I don't know what to say about what for this makeup.
You couldn't do an ogre accent?
Hi, David.
There we go. What series are you covering this week, David?
Well, watch out, because we're covering Witch Watch.
Witch
Watch out. We were just talking about Samurai X. Samurai Check.
Which watch is that?
A Rolex.
Anyway. So this was written by Shinohara Kenta. And
yep.
David, what are the other works this guy's done?
Don't actually know, Jordan. Can you think of any authors that have had three successful manga? Because he's done Sket Dax or Skeet Dance. I'm actually not sure. It's S-K-E-T, all caps.
Yeah.
And then he did Kanatan no Astra, which was actually notable that he had a prominent, not non-binary, a gender character.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that was really interesting. And both of those have anime. So, and now that the series, you know, has been running for over a year with 61 chapters, I think the odds are pretty good that this manga is probably going to get an anime adaptation. So can you think of any authors that have had three? You can definitely think of two, but can you think of authors that have made three good manga in their run?
That's tricky, because usually, like, if you have a good manga, it takes a really long time to, like, finish one, you know? It usually goes for a very long time. Off the top of my head, not really, no.
All right, listeners, let us know in the comments if you can think of anyone.
I'm sure there's someone obvious. Like, I'm sure there's just, like, someone, for whatever reason, just it's not occurring to us when it's like...
Yeah.
Anyway, it's still a pretty big accomplishment to have three successful manga.
Yeah, but Jordan, though, do you mind telling us why we think this might be his third successful manga in the plot summary?
Well, I will after you tell me the run dates.
Oh, I'm so sorry. This ran from February 8th, 2021, and is still ongoing. And as I mentioned before, it has 61 chapters, 62 depending on when this episode comes out.
So it's still a member of the U63 club.
Yes. Fuck off.
If you say so. Anyway, yeah, I'll get into the goddamn plot summary now. Nico is a young witch. Her mother gives her a bell that she says to keep on her at all times. This is probably very important, but it is not important for this chapter.
Mm-mm.
But later, some bullies are harassing this kid named Morohito Otogi for standing up for one of their bullying victims. He dodges most of their attacks super easily like a fucking king, but he allows one of them who has like really, really fancy hair to get a hit in just to make him feel satisfied.
Oh, that's so nice of him.
It is. He's a very thoughtful guy. He's explaining this to his dad after the fact, and he tells him, hey, it was better to let him just get a hit in and be satisfied than the alternative, which would be me killing him, which I could do easily because plot twist, we are a family of ogres.
I really like the dad's hair. Looks like horns.
His dad's hair is great, yeah. And Morohito has like that one alfalfa kind of hair that, I don't know.
Alfalfa hair? I've never heard that term before. What does that mean?
You've never seen The Little Rascals?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I've seen that.
That one little kid alfalfa, because he's got like the little bit of hair up there. I think it's like an alfalfa plant.
Maybe he's an ogre. Imagine if The Little Rascals is canon to Witch Watch.
No, the Little Rascals are one of the teams in the Dark Tournament.
I was wondering about that, why there was, you know, there was that soapbox derby part of Yu Yu Hakusho. Which, as someone currently rereading Yu Yu Hakusho, my god, are the first 20 chapters of Yu Yu Hakusho not that great?
They are not, no. I really think that there was a major course correction that happened, where he was just like, oh, this isn't working, I'm just gonna make it into a fighting tournament manga, and it turns out that was 100% the correct decision. Regardless of that, that's a whole other conversation, because Morohito's dad tells him that, hey, you know, remember Nico, that little witch girl you grew up with who went away
to- We gotta go bowling.
Nico,
let's go bowling.
Oh, big American titties. But anyway, she went away to Hogwarts, you know, when you were little. Well,
yep.
She's coming back from witch school, and she wants you to be her familiar.
This reminds me, by the way, I didn't notice for a long time that every chapter of Mashal is called Mashal, Bernadette, and the...
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, God.
I just noticed that when I was like looking at it. I was like, fuck, how have I read like 40 chapters and not noticed?
That's really good.
I told you, man, Mashal's pretty good, man.
Mashal's pretty good. Look, I never said it wasn't. But yeah, due to a cursed contract, Morihito cannot refuse this or else he will turn into some weird abomination. And, you know, his dad would love to help, but he's got to go on a business trip. Sorry, kid. Guess you and her got to live alone for a little while because this is now an 80s sitcom. Popcorn, David.
Nico is flying back home, but has such a crush on Morihito that she loses focus and smashes through his window right when he happens to be wondering about her. Nico repairs the window, but sacrifices Morihito's prized rare mug to do so. And he's pretty upset about that. So for context, the way magic, like recovery magic works is you have to take something that someone cares a lot about as like a sacrifice. It's like Full Metal Alchemist.
Yeah.
Transmutation, where it's the cost of fixing something. You have to break something else.
I also want to clarify, when we said abomination earlier, the way ogres work in this series is actually pretty interesting. The idea is that, like, what is it, like, a witch will choose an animal to be their familiar, and then sometimes the familiar gets so powerful they take on a human form, and then that familiar, you know, mates with, like, another familiar or witch or human or whatever, and they give birth to ogres. So the idea behind the curse is if you don't become the familiar, you're going to just turn into a weird amalgamation of the animals that were the familiars that turned into ogres.
Yeah.
The manga explains it better than I did.
Yeah, that sounds about right. But to continue, then she turns herself into paper, talking about people turning into things, and goes flying like a sail, lodging herself in between two houses as the school bully from earlier shows up because, it's his house. See, you fucking, those fucking rich people ruining everything for everyone.
God, yeah, seriously.
Fucking Elon Musk. Morihito uses his ogre powers to punch a hole in the wall, saving Nico before she expands and gets crushed. Sorry, I'm sure that was someone's fetish.
Literally about to say those exact words.
Yeah, we did.
I don't think it's presented in a fetishy way. It's just we both know that that's somebody's fetish.
That's how you know the author didn't have a crushing fetish, because he definitely could have written it that she got crushed somewhat.
Yeah.
Nico uses her repair ability to fix the wall, but this time she sacrifices the bully's prized hair. Morihito then flashes back to when his dad told him how Nico's mom prophesied that her daughter would be in danger, and that he must be her familiar to guard her. So Morihito's like, I must fulfill my duty, and the chapter ends.
Yeah.
But you know what begins, Jordan?
Would that be our first impressions?
Oh, you know it.
Oh, yes.
We should get David Hayter on the show. That would be great. Actually, yeah.
Let's get David Hayter.
What's he up to? Yeah, I'll send him an email.
Yeah, call him up after this. See what he's up to. Yeah, see what he's doing.
Okay. Huh. We both have the same first name, so we're, you know, in the David club. He's
pretty much brothers at this
point. Oh, yeah. We should have had him on Teenage Renaissance David.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Oh, well, anyway.
Remember, we decided not to. I don't remember why, but anyway. It was a mistake.
Sean from Anime Out of Context is an even greater guy than David Hayter.
Oh, wow. That's a big compliment, Sean.
Yeah. wait, this is Patreon content. He's never going to hear this. I wonder if Dylan... I don't know if Dylan listens to this stuff. Hi, Dylan, if you're listening. Anyway, Jordan, so what were your first impressions?
This series is structured fantastically.
I don't think I've ever seen a manga do like a sitcom-style cutaway. There's like a page where it just shows scenes with him, with her, without any dialogue, and like the way that you like a Brooklyn Nine-Nine style, where it's like, you know, like, or feeling like, I remember that one time, but not like, but actually funny.
Yeah, but I was just really surprised at how the series like subtly set up all of these like Chekhov's guns and then just like set them off. Moi, they call it Moi because it's a whole thing. I'm just going to call him that. I think it's easier for both of us if we just call him Moi. Moi, well, he meets these bullies early on, and the bullies, they just kind of mention offhand that like, that's that one douchebag. Yeah, look at how much he cares about his hair. What the fuck? And then later, when she smashes through the window, she repairs the window and she's like, I have to sacrifice something that somebody cares about. So then it's great because then when they repair the wall at the end, she sacrifices the bully's hair. And we already know that he cares about it. And now he's bald. It's a very well done joke, and it was just very efficiently told. This is just a very well executed plot.
This is a chapter that really used every single thing that it presented in a very tight way. This is the third manga from someone who's written a lot of quality.
You can tell. You
can't make a series like this out the gate. Also, the paneling was fantastic, the composition. Yeah. I do want to say the art, I think, was fine, but nothing like rememberable.
And that's fine. Like, here's the thing. One of the ways to make good manga art, you know, there are many different ways, but one of the ways is to make art that kind of gets out of the way of the story.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel this guy does. It's actually very difficult to do that.
Yeah. And you already know he's probably thinking about how an anime adaptation would work as well when he was probably drawing this.
Or at the very least, he just knew, okay, if I draw this, it's going to be a pain in the ass. So I'm going to draw her like this. If I do that, that's going to suck. Whatever, so I'll do that. You know, it was just very, it felt very professionally done.
Yeah.
I'm really not surprised to learn that this guy has been previously successful. You can tell.
Yeah, and this reminds me a lot of Cop at Dolphin, which is a similar thing where that's in our offer that's made three manga, though obviously only one of them was ever successful, but it has similar energy. So like, if you're listening to this and you like Cop and Dolphin, definitely I think you'd like Witch Watch. I will say though that I think to just talk about some negative, this has a fuck ton of text. I heard that is a common complaint about this series.
The series, I feel, is very efficient and well-structured despite the text that I didn't even notice that it was wordy until I read your criticism, and then I went back and yeah, no, you're right. It is.
There's at least one famous page where there's like an entire text conversation is shown, and it's like legitimately like a 300-word conversation is one page.
Oh man, we were talking about Yu Yu Hakusho earlier. That's definitely a move out of Togashi's handbook, you know?
Well, Togashi invented manga, so it makes sense.
Well, yeah, exactly. But it just goes to show you, you know, maybe it wasn't just that there was a ton of bullshit text in Build King, it was also bad.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you can be very wordy and have good purpose to it. But yeah, and then, yeah, this series is a lot of fun. Also, I noticed this is actually the first series I've read that had editor notes in, like, a long time. I remember I talked to Stephen Paul, and he was like, yeah, it's not like we don't have a policy against it, but just as translation has improved, the need for editor's notes has, you know, gone down. So it was interesting to see that the series still needed it just because it is covering more Japan cultural specific topics.
It was interesting to me that they called them ogres when they're very clearly, like, in Japanese, 100% they're called oni. It makes me kind of wonder, like, well, maybe wonder two things. First of all, how many times in manga is there a pun on oni-chan? And the other one is, it's just kind of like, do you guys think we don't know what oni are? Like, you don't have to fuck it. Like, this is Shonen Jump, guys. Like, we know.
Well, like,
you don't have to hide it.
It seems to be the case, like, for instance, in the English official translation, they don't call Chopper a tanuki. They still say raccoon dog.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so they just don't feel like the audience will know what a tanuki is.
I guess maybe if I was like a Shonen Jump exec, I guess somebody works at Shueisha, I'd be like, yeah, but you guys have read manga all the time. This is my executive voice. Yeah, you guys read manga your whole lives, you know? Normal Sally Joe from down the street, she don't know what an oni is. She doesn't know what a fucking yokai is.
Oh god, oh, her Mononoke.
She does know what a Mononoke is, though.
They do say yokai, but...
They do, yeah.
But Jordan, speaking of oni, you're the only one for me. One last thing is, I also liked how the magic has rules to it. It's not just vague, like, plot magic. There seems to actually have been tangible thought about how her powers work that will probably be relevant and is relevant in this chapter.
Yeah, it made sense. I mean, in the sense that there was an internal logic to it, you know?
Yeah.
And the jokes were funny. There was a moment where, like, she makes herself flat as paper and it's making her really sick and she...
she vomits confetti.
Says that the barf turned into confetti. One of such a good joke. Oh my god.
And to talk about that cutaway scene, I remember it was like, remember her magic? And it just shows panels of her like lighting him on fire by accident and stuff. Like, that was like just a sitcom style cutaway. And I loved it.
This really feels like a sitcom.
Yeah, I mean, I just, again, I've never seen a manga do a sitcom style cutaway like that.
This is interesting in like kind of a subtle way too. Like, honestly, the first couple pages, I thought I was going to hate Morihito because he just seemed too confident and self-assured.
And he also didn't want to be involved in the plot, which we've seen in things like SWAT makes the character really annoying.
But also, David, you know,
what?
First part of the hero's journey is when the hero refuses the call to action.
That's fair.
As Jordan B. Peterson says, but anyway, I keep harping on the plot structure, and that's because, look, I do a lot of plot descriptions. What I do when I write them is the first run through, I actually try and just write down everything that I remember happened in the manga. This was a nightmare for Hungry Mary, but my god, it was so easy for this chapter.
Yeah.
Because everything was just logical and made sense, and you could draw a direct cause and effect.
I feel like this author is probably friends with the creator of Hungry Mary.
Probably, yeah.
They've both been doing this a while. There probably is like a society of like, you know, older manga writers. They compare arthritis medication.
I mean, they're definitely colleagues. I don't know if they're that old. Like, I guess they'd have to be 40s or 50s, though.
I mean, to be in your 40s, because this is not aging you well. Like, we heard what happened to the creator of Berserk, how he pretty much he had like the physical health of someone that was probably 80 years old because of his lifestyle.
But David, on the flip side, Araki.
That's because Araki is a vampire, Jordan. I mean, JoJo is an autobiography.
Yeah, okay. Araki's Dio. That's the sequel. That's
Dio.
Dio feels sick.
But speaking of things that are never going to end, Jordan, would you read in our 10 chapters of this?
Yeah.
Yeah, this has actually been on my to-read list, so I'm really glad because I had been waiting to read it. So I'm probably just going to keep reading it after this call.
I had to stop myself from going to the next chapter. It's been a while since I've read a manga where, like, I was just like, one more page.
What was the last time? Lucifer and the Biscuit Hammer, where I think you just kept going after we recorded?
Yeah, possibly.
I thought you really liked Lucifer and the Biscuit Hammer.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that. No, it was, I just felt very compelled to just finish the whole thing super quickly in a way that I don't normally feel.
Well, luckily for you, you've got 60 more chapters of this to read.
Yes! But David, what do you think's gonna happen next?
Alright, so my guesses are the main character accidentally reversed into an animal and they're gonna have to fix it. So like, he's like, I quit, and it turns him into some weird chimera thing and she has to figure out how to undo it.
Yeah.
The series makes a self-aware joke about how wordy it gets, and the impending danger will be from a family member of the witch. So maybe she has like an evil aunt or uncle.
Okay.
And then how about you, Jordan?
My guesses are Moy's alfalfa hair. It turns into a horn when he goes, like, full ogre.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is Nico is going to try sacrificing herself using her repair powers in order to save Moy's life.
Aw.
See, that's a very dramatic moment, right?
Yep.
Exactly. You had an immediate emotional response. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My last one is there actually is no curse contract, and their parents are just trying to set them up together.
Aw, that's so sweet.
Because there's one moment where Moy is explaining, well, if I don't do this, I'm going to revert into a gross abomination or whatever. And Nico's immediate reaction is, what? And I think that the author is skilled enough where he wouldn't have done that by accident. And honestly, like, now that I learned this author has a previous manga with an agendered character, maybe Moy's gay. Because they constantly mention the whole chapter. We constantly look at Nico. Nico is like, oh, he's so hot. He's so cute. Oh my God, I want him so bad. And he, like, to the point where it seems like it's setting up for a joke. Like, it seems like there's a ball that's going to be dropped. Maybe it's even just that Moy has a girlfriend or something.
That'd be funny if he just has a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Or a boyfriend, actually.
Exactly. Or a boyfriend. Like, the point is something funny that means they cannot be together is my point. Not that being gay is funny. David, anyway, what's your power word?
My power word is sitcom, because this literally is like I am reading an American-style sitcom.
100%.
How about yours?
I'm very proud of mine. It is onion, but it's like oni-on, because ogres, like onions, have layers, and they are oni, actually. Thank you. I'll be here all week. Thank you. Anyway, yeah.
All right, let's go to shout-outs. All right, shout-out time. All right. Jordan, thank you so much for editing this episode and just being a great co-host.
David, you're very welcome.
I also want to give props to Shannon for the awesome cover art. You can find her online at Illuminati. I want to thank Dylan for assistance with editing. You can find his podcast at Anime Out of Context. Thanks to Tucker for assistance with pronunciation, translation, and other miscellaneous research. Thanks to T-Root, Ozzy Rat, and T-Wolford for their awesome transcription, for being our awesome transcription volunteers. Find them on our site as they become available.
Oh, David, wait one sec. Thanks for all you do.
Yeah, thanks, babe.
You mean a lot to me.
You're the best.
Yeah, oh, so sweet.
Yeah. Oh, can you say that? Yeah. I heard some background noise. Can you say that again?
No.
Okay. You can find us on Twitter at Shonen Flopcast and our website, shonenflop.com. We're also on Spotify, iTunes, YouTube, or wherever else you get your podcast. And if you're not in the Discord, remember to join, man. We've got some awesome movie nights. You can ask us questions. You can submit 6-word summaries. It's just a lot of fun, and it's open to everyone, even though if you're listening to this, you're a patron, so you don't have to stress about that.
I would love to meet somebody who accidentally became a patron somehow.
Oh, there was someone who was a patron for 2 days, so...
What's this manga podcast? Yeah. And why am I giving them $50 a month?
They didn't give a shit.
Damn it.
But thank you so much, patrons. We love you so much. And thank you all for your continued support. It's been an awesome 2 years, and we really couldn't make this show without all of your awesome support.
Oh, you're so beautiful.
You're beautiful.
So beautiful. Oh, you're beautiful.
I think, was that guy a one-hit wonder?
Yeah.
Oh, good for him.
Well, he also prevented World War III, allegedly.
All right, bye. Because
he refused to fire his gun one time. Anyway, bye everybody! Bye. Wait, no, well, David, say it!
Keep on flopping, floppers.
Yeah, bye!
Bye.